Ask the Podcast Coach for November 21st, 2015.
Let's get ready to podcast.
All right. Well, I think I got it all together this morning. Ask the Podcast Coach. This morning, we are live here to answer your podcasting questions. Dave Jackson is out on assignment. He's actually moving today, which is nobody ever likes to move. So I've gotten another co-host to jump in with me. And of course, it is the famous who we say his name all the time. He is known as Steve Stewart. Steve, welcome to Ask the Podcast Coach.
Thanks for having me. You almost didn't get me because I actually offered to help Dave move, but he said he had it covered. So and he's a little bit of a drive from St. Louis to get there to help. So I thought I'd just do this for him as a favor, sit in his seat.
Well, I appreciate it. Good to have you. And I've been on your blab before. You do some financial. Tell us, give us the rundown on you. Like, tell us your site and what you do and your podcast and that kind of stuff.
Sure. I do a whole bunch of things, so we don't want to go too long on this. Personal finance coach. I help people with their personal finances, not investing in insurance, but just getting their checkbook in order. I've been doing that since 2007, launched the Money Planet Source podcast. It'll be 5 years ago, this coming Monday was when that show launched. I did retire it. I've got a new show coming out on a network pretty soon. We can talk about that later if we have the time. But I also love the medium of podcasting so much so that I go to all the conferences. I join all the membership clubs. I get on Twitter and talk to people about podcasting and do some podcast coaching on the side as well.
Now, very good. Thanks for coming in. And like I said, Dave may join us. And if you want to join us too, you can, we have an open seat for you. We take one at a time, couple rules. We take one at a time and we don't need to take you in right away. So if you click the open seat to join us, I think it says call in on your side. If you hit the call in and it takes a minute or two, just hang tight. Steve and I might be in the middle of a thought and we'll wrap that up and then bring you in. And we'd love to have you as a part of Ask the Podcast Coach. Steve, do you get out on Saturday mornings to watch us fairly often? Is this a regular thing or kind of hit or miss?
No, it's weird. I don't think I've actually watched a live one in about 6 months. For one reason, we're busy. Saturday's the day to, vacuum the house and do things around the yard and all this other stuff. And then there's the second part is, hey, this is on, it's on iTunes, so I can listen to it later if I want. So if I don't have something, some posing question in my mind that I want to get answered right away, I pretty much just sit back and wait for it to come through iTunes.
Steve, back to your thought, Saturday mornings, it's when Dave first said, let's do Saturday mornings. And he was just screwing around, goofing off when he first started. Didn't even have a name of a podcast. And I kind of joined him. I actually saw a tweet or something come through. And I think it was on Spreaker when we were first doing this. And Saturday mornings are that's when I edit and produce my own podcast, the Home Gadget Geeks. And so I just jumped in and started joining him. But I don't think Saturday mornings are tough. And when Dave first said, let's do the Saturday mornings at 10:30 Eastern, I was like, we will get no one. Are you kidding me? That's a tough time slot. He totally proved me wrong. I mean, we're 23 now on Blab, and we regularly hit 35 to 40 on a Saturday morning, which is amazing. And then, a couple hundred, I think, download the podcast after the fact. Dave makes this available in audio and video format. And you can download it. So, well, thanks for listening to it on the backside. I'm always suspect. Call-in shows are tough. From a podcasting standpoint, you got to be ready with material and you got to kind of handle, be ready for whatever the folks that call in. You've been doing some financial blabs on this. Going out there. Are you taking callers and taking questions, or is it pretty much just hosts and it's done?
Yeah, it's something that I've partnered with Amy Robles from Think Enriched. She has a podcast, thinkenriched.com, and it's in the same genre as mine. So we both love talking about personal finance and behavior change that affects your finances. And so we thought, hey, let's just get on a blab sometime, test it out. And that one night turned into a 3-hour blab session. I think you actually jumped in on that one.
I might have. I'm going to have.
James Kinson was with us. Yeah.
Yeah.
She fell in love with the medium and the ability to come, converse with people. Cause as podcasters, we don't get to do this. And seeing what Dave has done here and you and Dave just building this community over the years. And now it's on Blab, which makes it easy for anybody That's just a testament to A, good content, B, great personalities, and C, you guys keep it moving. We found a couple times in our blabs where if there's not, you know, if it was just me, oh my gosh, it would be an epic fail. There's no way I could get people just to join in. But because it's her and me and we're inviting both our audiences and trying to get, you know, other people to join in, we found that we'll get at least one person who sticks on for like a half an hour and we just chat forever
and get deep into it. Do you think there's different talents between being a mono or a solo caster is kind of what I like to call them, you know, guys and gals who come on and just talk. And then the more interview style, which is like what we're doing, we'll call this kind of interview style. It's the two of us. I'm not really interviewing you. You're here to talk, but where it's multiple. Do you find one easier than the other personally? And then do you think there's a special talent for the monocasters? Because I'm not good at that. That's just not my gift.
I deal a lot with financial bloggers. They write. That's what they do. They write. They have no interest in rich media like this, but I've been trying to bring some of them over and they see the power of podcasting. And one thing I tell them is, you know what? You don't have to have an interview show. You can just take your content and repurpose it through an audio blog, which you and I know is a podcast. If you've got the content in front of you, then doing it solo is a lot easier, even though it's still kind of a, you know, you don't want to sound too much like you're reading a script. But if you can communicate well with other people, and I actually don't feel I'm good at this, but I try really hard and I keep trying and trying. If you can communicate with someone, then an interview style just works out better. It just works out better. But when you get to the end of a thought, like I'm doing right now, and you don't know where to leave off, it's just like, okay, I'm done. Drop the mic.
Yeah. You kind of need, I think one of the things Dave and I think we do well together is kind of knowing when we've come to the end of a thought so the other one can pick it up and keep going with it. And there's, I feel like sometimes there's times I interrupt Dave in the process of that, but I just know like he's been going on for a while and he's, and maybe he repeats himself. And that's kind of that telltale sign, even with a guest. Once they start reiterating what they've been saying, then you kind of know you got to kind of cut it off. You know, you're like, because in silence, people will go on forever. And so you just, you know, you jump in there and cut it off. So I think that's one of the things as I've worked with him. I think we're up to 100 now of these things, which is crazy. We don't number them. So, you know, we've gone against the podcasting norm of everyone having, they have dates, but he's got to go back and count them when we start doing that. But done 100 of these together, we kind of know, you know, it's like, okay, Dave's coming up to a finish. And it's one of those things that I think the more you do it with your co-host, the better. But I do think, Steve, there are people, and I've heard them, and actually at Gallup, where I'm at, we just started a brand new one with a guy like this, where he's just a gifted speaker, and he is better by himself. And so we do like this 10 to 15 minute, you know, solo cast, mono cast with them. It's brilliant. I mean, it's just awesome. This thing is going to go, this is going to be big. This is like NPR size kind of stuff. I'm super excited because it's a big name at Gallup and he's been in the industry a long time. And we're going to kind of revitalize his voice with the podcast. Emily has a question. Any tips you can give on holding a giveaway? Oh, this is sticky, sticky place. Things I need to put in fine print on the website or mention on our podcast. Steve, have you done giveaways?
Yeah. I recently did a giveaway on my show, my old show. And it's actually funny because I had the guy on the blab the other night, and this is the book that I gave away. His name is Matt Hamm. The book is called Redefine Rich. And what I did was, he actually was a guest on my show. So impressed with him and his story, and didn't even get half of his story out. That I decided I want to give his book away just because it's so awesome. She used the right word, giveaway, because it's not a raffle. It's not a contest. It's a giveaway. There's a lot fewer restrictions by doing a giveaway, making it random. I use something called Rafflecopter. There's a free version. You might want to go check it out. Rafflecopter is just, it's very, very basic, very bland. Unless you pay for a premium feature and put your logoing in on it, gives you some additional features, but it works. It randomizes the selection. It gives people ways to enter, you know, they gain entries and you get to dictate how many entries they get for, you know, sharing on Facebook or posting a tweet or whatever.
It's got a bunch of those social share capabilities built into it, right? Yeah. That's what I like. Because those things are hard to track, right? Yeah. those things are tough to track.
Yeah, sign up for your newsletter, all kinds of things.
Yeah. Any legal, when you think, and we're not lawyers, so we'll say that right off the bat, but do you put any legal verbiage like no, in every state, actually, by the way, has kind of these different regulations on what you have to do and what you don't have to do. So I would actually maybe look into it a little bit based on your state. And there may be even for even giveaways or contests, there may be some verbiage you have to put in somewhere on your site. No purchase required. Some of those, you know, I don't know what those things are. Steve, I moved away from giveaways. I'll be honest with you. I did a couple of them and they didn't really work. Do you find you get much engagement on your giveaways? Is it as engaging as you want it to be?
I would love it to be more engaging. And really, I think it depends on the prize as well. You know, if it's a hard copy book, some people are interested if they're really interested in the topic or the author. If it's a gadget, I mean, people, I think, go for gadgets more than they do for books.
They don't, though. This is the crazy thing. No, I'm a gadget guy, right? And we've given away, you know, gadgets, Drobos, you know. I mean, I've given away some expensive stuff, and I get like 30 guys.
Really?
And I'm like, yeah. Here's the crazy thing. So we saw in the tech industry, we saw like Cali Lewis do a lot of this. Leo Laporte doesn't. He doesn't do a lot of giveaways, but Cali did a lot of these things. And so I think we all kind of thought this would be awesome. And you're seeing less and less. Like today in the tech world, it's not being done very much anymore, these contests, because I don't think they work. It's your mileage may vary, but I'm just skeptical that giveaways, I think people know that you're mining for an email, right? And they're like, do I want it? Don't I? No, I don't really want that. And so I'm not going to give them my email. I don't know. Steve, what do you think?
Yeah, but if you give your email for a free ebook, it's pretty much the same thing. It's just a contest.
True.
Not a contest, excuse me. It's a giveaway. The difference, very big difference between giveaway, contest, and raffle. Giveaways are, you were asking earlier about, is there any disclosures and stuff that I put on? I don't. If it's a giveaway, it's randomized. There's no preferential treatment. There's very basic parameters. Hey, you know, go here, do one of these things by this date, and then I'll pull the winner, you know, some day later. That's all you really need if it's a giveaway. If it's a raffle and a contest and you're selecting a winner from this and that, you know, I'm a little nervous about those, so I don't even try those. I just don't want to mess with that.
Stargate Pioneer says, we use giveaways as a way to engage our listener. We make it creative and funny, and it works well for our format. So that's, I think, again, you know, one size doesn't fit all in this case. I think it matters on your format and how creative it is and how well you engage your audience on it. I think if you just find a sponsor to give you something and then you try to give it away, I think you're going to have varying, you know, luck with that. Like I said, we just haven't. I've given away some really expensive stuff, and it hasn't really gone very well. So, well, you mentioned the ebook, right? I mean, this is kind of the trend now in this, is like, I'm going to create, so I'm going to do this kind of thing. And then come to my site, by the way, we do this at Gallup too. Come to my site and download this thing, which is free, and then I'm going to get your email. Do you think eventually people will see through that as well? Or is this a bulletproof way for the future of continuing to build your list?
I think it depends on how valuable you like your email box. You know, how much do you value the time you spend in your email? Giving up your email address for anything, you know, the free ebook or a giveaway or contest or, you know, those are, I think the reason why I don't enter a lot of contests is because I don't want to get on somebody's email list. But then if there is somebody who I like what they're saying, I want whatever the free thing is, then yeah, absolutely give it up. And then I don't get upset when I get an email from them, you know, 3 days in a row, and then one another 4 days later, and then they go weekly, and then, you know, kind of trickles away from that. I'm okay with it then.
Well, and users are getting more savvy with their email address. So like, I'll admit it. I have an email address that I use just for those kinds of signups, and I don't check it very often. And I don't, right. It's one of those kinds of things where, and not the contests, but the, you know, if I want to download something from them. And so I have a special spam email address that I use, and that's the one I put in, because I know once I download it, I'm not going to get anything back from them, but stuff, right. And you know, spam usually is what I'm going to get back from them. And so, I think more users are getting that way. You know, I have an email list that I use on MailChimp for my listeners, and my engagement rate on that list, and these are people I asked to subscribe, and I didn't even give them anything. So these are like people that weren't coming to subscribe for something. You would think, oh, that'd be, you get a pretty good percent, a pretty good open rate on those. And even on that, it's like 40%. So you think, geez, you know, this one, the email system is broken in a lot of ways. We get so much junk in our boxes. People miss things. And two, they get the volume at which people are subscribing to things is so great that they just get flooded with that. So I don't know. Everybody says the money's in the list. I think, would you agree with that, Steve, and why?
Yeah, I don't know why. I can't tell you why. I think it's obviously Twitter and Facebook is fleeting, not fleeting as in, you know, it's not a bad thing. It's just so quick. It runs by so quick. Email can sit in, you know, right there in front of your face for as long as you let it. So maybe that is why. But I couldn't tell you exactly what it is.
It is, though. This is the crazy thing. Whenever I send out, I sent out a note this week to my audience. I've been working with Udemy, that company that does training. You know, they're like a Pluralsight or a Lynda.com. And they were running some Black Friday specials. And so they were sending me some links and they had special promotional price. And I just sent a note out to my email list and I sent it out to my Twitter folks. And overwhelmingly, the email list did way better from a click standpoint than, and I encourage my folks, like, I'm not asking you to buy this. I just want you to consider if this meets your need, you know, I don't endorse any of this. It's just, we got some good pricing here. Maybe this will work for you. And the click-through rate off my email list was way better than it was on Twitter. And so it's just, it's one of those things.
Well, think about it this way. With Twitter, you may never even see it. Whereas with an email, you have to take an action. And that might just simply be hitting the delete button, but you have to take an action. So there's going to automatically, just by the fact that you've let someone into your email box, you know, by giving them your email address, you have to take an action, even if it is click, delete, you know, and it's over with.
Yeah. You know, people say all the time that nobody sees things on Twitter. And yet I get so many complaints about the automatic tweets that I put out sometimes that it's weird because you think, oh, nobody's checking it. Nobody's looking at it. Just post something or spam somebody with something on Twitter. You will see that that they are watching at times. I think it's a little more. I think we get a little more engagement on Twitter than people think. And I'm wondering, because I'm subscribed to 2,000 or I follow 2,000 people, and that stream will literally move faster than I can watch it. Right? It's like 6 new, 12 new, 15 new, 6 new. You know, I'm like, you couldn't even keep up with it. But I am surprised about the number of complaints. I use quite a bit of If This Then That or Zapier, these automated services to kind of work with my Twitter account. And I am surprised at just how many complaints I get, which means they have to be reading it. Here's an example, and this isn't a complaint, but it is one of those things when we talk about engagement. So every morning at 9 a.m., I automatically post a weather tweet for Omaha. It's just one of those things I realize on If This Then That, they check the weather. They have a weather integration. You can put in a zip code and run an automatic process that'll drop that anywhere you want. And so I just have it drop into Buffer, and then Buffer sends it out. Steve, I get more comments on that 9 a.m. weather. You know, it's hashtag weather nerd at the end. And I get more comments, so much so my boss came in the other morning and said, and he's not even a big Twitter guy. He came in the other morning. He's like, hey, thanks for letting me know what the weather was this morning. I couldn't
look out the window myself to see.
He thought I was tweeting this, right? This is the thing. He thought I was manually tweeting the weather every day when it's an automatic process. But my boss, who isn't into Twitter at all, the fact that he mentioned it to me in the dining room on a Friday morning thought, somebody is looking. So I'm just that you made that statement, like, you know, I don't know if anybody's, it goes by so fast. I kind of think people are, you know, so
I don't know. I'm trying to think of why. I mean, obviously it's a very easy way for anyone to get into a conversation. Hey, what's the weather like out there? So maybe it's the easy way to start a conversation rather than, you know, what's your political opinion on this or that, or, you know, hey, buy my book, you know?
Well, yeah. Daniel asked how many automated tweets per day. So I assume that comes to me. Steve, do you do any automation with Twitter at all? Let's ask you.
Yeah, I'll use Hootsuite and I'll use Buffer. I'll do maybe 3 to 4 max a day usually.
Yeah, and I think I'm closer to 8, but I follow RSS feeds. Like I follow Science 360. I follow NASA Images. And so whenever they up, those are cool, right? Because it's interesting bits of stuff that comes out. So I probably tweet automatically more often, but I'm hoping, I mean, those are really cool. For the people who follow me, right? For the science nerds who follow me, those are cool, I think. Nobody's complained about those. I get the highest engagement. An interesting thing, the other thing I do is I tweet friends. So like people in our community who are in our network, and we'll talk about networks here in a little bit, but that who are in our network, when they post, I retweet them. So I've been on this show called The Home Server Show for 5, 6 years now.
Back in the day.
Way back in the day. And we record like one a month. That's kind of that podcast. But what's surprisingly, and I track everything on Buffer, a normal tweet for me, and let's say I have 2,800 followers at this point. A normal tweet for me gets 2 or 3 bits of clicks or engagement, right? And I don't know if you follow your analytics on your Twitter account and how they tweet, but I get 2 or 3 average, right? When I click Dave's or when I send out anything from Home Server Show, it goes to the 40s and 50s. Like, I mean, an exponential number of. So it just want to talk about audience engagement. What are my Twitter followers? What are they really interested in? Well, they're interested in what the home server stuff that I used to do or I still do. I still have high engagement around that, right? So it'd give me a clue, like if you want to know what your audience wants to hear, that's probably what they want to hear, at least on Twitter. Steve, when you look at your stats or when you think about Twitter, do you get any insights like that? Have you kind of thought through that audience engagement?
I stopped looking at my stats. They're too depressing. I like to have conversations. I don't necessarily look at click-through rates on Twitter posts and, you know, how many views and impressions there are. I much would rather work one-on-one, talk one-on-one, be one-on-one with people on social media if I'm not doing it in person.
That's a good place to be. I do find Buffer stats though helpful when you run all your tweets through Buffer and you can quickly look and say what's getting engagement and what's not getting engagement. If you want to know sometimes, that's not bad. Craig asks this question. He says, how often do you prune your Twitter list to cut down on who you're following? Steve, do you have a process that you use for that?
Funny, actually, I had started doing something recently, not to the degree that I think a lot of people do. I heard an interview with someone say, start following 150 to 200 people a day. And then, you know, that's how they grow their list. I'm not good with that. I want to have a communication with a person. And a lot of the Twitter accounts I'm seeing now, they're companies. And the ones that follow me are like, hey, you know, buy 10,000 Twitter followers. So I have started to go through and like the other day, Jim, I actually went through your Twitter followers and looked to see who are real people and followed a few of them. And so, yeah. And there's a cool app called Crowdfire. Have you used that before?
We've talked about that here before. Okay. But for new folks, crowdfireapp.com, I think, is the web address you go to. It's really good on your phone. Android, iPhone, both, I think. I've done the paid version. In fact, I paid, I think it's a $4.99 one time.
I haven't paid for it yet.
I think you can enable, it gives you some more capabilities to do. I think you get 100 something, whatever it is, I forget. And then if you pay the $4.99, it unlocks all that. And for $4.99 one time, that's a pretty good deal. But yeah, you're right. Crowdfire allows you to kind of quickly add and subtract. And copy follow is the magic of Crowdfire, right? So you looked me up, my followers showed up, and then you went through and looked for, and I've done this too, exact same thing. Maybe even you. I might have done this with you already too. Or you start following people, real people, right? That you're looking, I'm looking for a picture of a face. And what I look for is something like tech or dad, right? I have found that if someone puts dad in their bio, they're going to follow me back, right? Or I'm going to fit their demographic. Now, I'm not forcing them to follow me back. Some people have a problem with this methodology. I mean, Dave does. When I talk about this, Dave's like, I don't know, Jim, that, you know, he's got a problem with it. Apparently you don't. I don't. Do you see that as being wrong to look at other people's followers and then follow those who follow somebody? I mean, I think you and I are pretty similar in a lot of ways.
I think that's perfectly fine. I mean, how are you going to grow an audience anyway? Or how are you going to grow a Twitter following or follow people who you want to, you know, have a relationship online with? If you're being more selective, I absolutely have no problem with it. Let me go back to what you're talking about, paying for the app. Yeah. There's a reason I don't pay for the app. It's not because I'm cheap, even though I am. It's because if I do, that opens up the floodgates to more and more hours I'm going to spend using this app. When I just want to limit myself, I actually think it's 25 or 50 followers. It'll let you follow from the app before they say, okay, you know, that's all you'll get for today. Come back tomorrow, or, you know, pay for $4.99 to get this unlocked. So I do that just to make sure I don't waste too much time, you know, following a bunch of people. And you said something about dwindling away or chipping away at the followers. I have done that in the past. And what I'll do is if I see someone in my Twitter stream and it's just post after post after post after post after post, you know, if I'm seeing, you know, 10 tweets from them in my stream and I've got 2,000 people I'm following, that one person is just tweeting too much. And I either unfollow or I mute them. I just can't take it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. When you do copy follow, you don't know who you're following. And then you got to kind of do some, I followed some folks and they just dominated my Twitter stream and out they go. The other thing I'm using Crowdfire app for is like when I'm waiting in line somewhere, I'll pull it out. And right after I check my fantasy football, because that's super important, then I'll go to Crowdfire app and I might just do a little bit, 10 or 15 minutes of adding and deleting, and getting those things done. So it's kind of a way of recouping that time. I don't do a lot of it, but I'll admit, I mean, it broke me through the 2000 barrier. You know, Twitter has that 2000 limit, and Crowdfire app broke me through it. I think I'm at 28. And I think when I work it, I can put 100 people, I can get 100 followers in a day when I'm working it. So it's one of those kinds of things that, okay, we got some questions. Let's not miss these. So we got one that says Hootsuite, Buffer, or Hootsuite, or do you have another app of choice for scheduling your tweets? Before we answer that, Daniel had said, when we talk about automation real quick, you know, he automates his tweets using Buffer or Hootsuite or one of those, but he still writes them himself. And that's, I don't do a lot of that. I retweet other people's RSS feeds, but you know, so there's maybe two separate discussions when we think about automation. Automation one, is it completely automated? You're doing nothing. I do quite a bit of that. Or is it automated in a way that you're authoring the tweets and you send them out? Steve, do you author your tweets then? I take it if you're scheduling them? That's your method too.
Because I will definitely check and see if it's something I want to share with my audience. And then if I realize that it's not, but there's a good point, I'll make a point of pointing out that, hey, there's a good section on this, even though I don't agree with the whole post or something like that. So I will definitely be checking what I'm tweeting. It's just not a blind tweet.
Mm-hmm. And then Buffer or Hootsuite or both for you?
Different purposes. I use Hootsuite for scheduling out when I want them to go. I'll be more strategic on when they go. But then if there's something that's just like, it can go out anytime, it's just sharing a link to something, then I use Buffer and that just throws it in. I know what times Buffer is going out, so I don't have two things going out at the exact same time between, you know, Hootsuite and Buffer. And then even just, you know, sharing on Twitter Live. So
you got to be careful. No, I don't think you have to be. I think people understand if two tweets, an automated one and a real one, come out at the same time, I don't think anybody's going to fault you for that. I like Buffer for the automated processes, that the integrations with like If This Then That or Zapier, some of those. Buffer, they've got a channel for that, and that's just been the choice that I've done for that. And then let's see. So there's a question that's not necessarily related. Good, maybe we'll change the topic. I better get the buzzer ready here because this is a blab question. So here we go.
I thought we were talking about podcasting.
Do people have the ability to make blabs private? Hold on. Well, okay. So we're talking about blab. No, they don't actually. A blab is open to the world. You can record it or not record it, but you can't make it private. So it always relates to podcasting in some way, Steve. Right? It always relates
we're looking
to podcasting.
At broadcasting, or we're looking at growing an audience. And that's what Twitter is. That's what automating tweets are. We're trying to get, you know, hopefully we're using hashtags in our tweets. We didn't even mention anything about Facebook or Pinterest yet.
No, not yet. Before we move on, though, let me remind folks, if you're sitting out there, we got 30 of you sitting out there. If you want to join us, I've seen a few of you try to pop in. If you want to pop in and add to the conversation, you can have a question, you can have a take. whatever you want. Jump on in if you just want to make a statement. Pop in and talk to us. Give us a minute to accept you once you get in. Or many of you have been popping questions in the chat room, and that's helpful. Also, if you use the /Q tag, so /Q and then the question, I can display the question in the video, which is sometimes kind of nice to get that done. And so it's that's the way to get your questions in. Steve Stewart here with me, and we're around here for the next hour, half hour or so. Can you stay for a little post show, Steve?
Yeah, I can.
Is that okay? Okay, good. We're hoping to get Dave Jackson in here. Typically, if you're new to Ask the Podcast Coach, Dave Jackson really runs this. He's the coach. We're just the stooges, right? We're on the outside. So it's run. If we got Dave in, I guess we'd be the three stooges at this point. But Dave Jackson's normally here. He's moving today. He said he might try to jump in at some point in time. But taking your questions, we'd love to interact with you as well. So Craig asked, how do you display the questions on the screen?
Oh, it's a blab like question. This. Hit the buzzer.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. We'll have to. Oh, let's see if we get it. There we go. So how do you get the blab questions on the screen? You just like you did, Craig. You just did it. So /Q gets you there. When you're controlling it, so I'm the host and I'm controlling it. And in the left-hand side, at least in the window I have today, it has the question, and when I click on it, it moves it over to the screen so folks can see it. And I'm pretty sure this shows up in the video as well, which is one of the new enhancements to Blab that they've created, which is pretty cool. All right, Steve, let's talk about your network. You talked about your joining one. Fill us in on what you're doing there.
Well, I retired the Money Planet Source podcast. After almost 5 years, I hit episode 200 and just retired it because I wanted to relaunch, rebrand, release myself from some restrictions I put on myself for that show. And in the process of evaluating what I wanted to do, I've combined forces with a guy here locally who has a podcast network and has had one for 10 years. He actually has a podcasting studio. It's not just in his basement. It's actually a rented office space. He's got a big mixer board in one room. Next room over, he's got, you know, a recording studio with a green screen. He's got the Heil Finn microphones with the Phantom Power. Oh, man, it's sweet. And then he actually has an editing bay with three workstations for his editors to go in and edit shows. So he provides services. He has 15 live shows plus about 7 or 8 retired shows in his network. And he approached me a while ago. He said, hey, I'd like to have him in the network. But at the time, I just wasn't interested. I want to do everything myself. I like to have the control. I like to know how it all works. I think we're to the point now where I think I know how everything works except SoundCloud. So so I can
still... Oh, don't worry about it. It's going to go anyway. So.
Yeah, it'll change. But I'm going to keep my feet in the water for another show that I'm hosting for a group that I'm in. But I decided, okay, it's time to monetize the show and get ads in there. And I wanted to get some help reaching a larger audience, especially an audience who'd never looked for a personal finance podcast. And the way that this podcast network work, and by the way, it's Two Guys Talking Podcast Network. Mike Wilkerson is the creator of it. He's been doing it for over 10 years now. The way that he's going to help me reach a bigger audience is he cross-pollinates the show with other shows. And I do the same on my show, you know, whether it's just a promo, little commercial break, or, you know, a live mention where it ties into the discussion that he's having with somebody else. And they do some other things as well, rather than going in, you know, a long description of that. But I'll be joining that network soon, even though there's some things that I still am not comfortable with. The opportunity is there to let me grow an audience that would have never found my show organically.
Yeah, no, we'll talk more about networks. We brought Mike Dell, and speaking of networks, he's been in and out of a network in the last couple weeks. We are getting a little echo back from you, Mike.
Yeah, I joined with Podcast Help Desk. I joined the Modern Life Podcast Network. Steve, I think, is listening or watching right now. And it was kind of an experiment because his network was using a certain technology and I was using a completely different one. And so I kind of half joined and it was working okay, but we decided not to continue that. It was a mutual decision. And then I brought another show onto that network. So I do have another show on Steve's network. It's Geek of the North, which was a retired show. And then I brought it back and I'm really enjoying it. And for that, it's totally on his system. And it, you know, that's the way to join a network. If you're going to do it fully, not halfway. If that makes any sense.
No, totally. And benefits, what are your perceived benefits of being on a network?
It's being associated with other great podcasters in this case, and it takes away a lot of the technical end of it for me. So this podcast, I turn on the mic, I produce it, I send it off to the network, and I'm done with it. You know, I promote it, but I don't have to worry if the feed goes down, I call Steve and complain.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Mike, would you say every podcaster should seek out a network, or are there some cases where a network doesn't make sense?
Depends on, you know, what you want to do with it. You know, with me, podcasting is like an advanced hobby. It's not, you know, I work in the podcast industry, but my podcasts themselves are not what I do to make money. So I'm doing it as kind of an advanced hobby and as something to, you know, so that I'm still into it so I can give other people advice, you know, but I'm not into it for, you know, a lot of these entrepreneurial pursuits, you know, it's fun for me, and then I want to keep it fun. And with a network, for certain shows, a network is great because a lot of times the burden of all the technology goes to somebody else. Sometimes not. Sometimes, you know, there's networks out there where you still do everything. And the other thing about it is, you know, I get to interact with other podcasters on the network, and we cross promote each other. And I mean, I don't know. It's a great idea for certain things, but like with my podcast help desk show, that one being independent is probably a better fit because, you know, I'm opinionated and I don't always agree with some of the others, you know, and I don't want it to look bad on a network. It's me, you know, it's totally me.
Right. Right. Well, good. Well, thanks, Mike.
Yeah,
thanks
for jumping in. Echo out of here.
Appreciate it. Have a great afternoon, man. Appreciate it. Yeah. If you're a podcaster and you're not listening to Podcast Help Desk, that is Mike's podcast. Just search Podcast Help Desk in any of the podcatchers or Google or any of those places. You can find Mike. Steve. So why for you again, why the change? I mean, why retire? Did you just feel like you'd said everything that needed to be said? And do you want to try something new, or are you making the jump to a network for possible better monetization possibilities?
A little bit of both and more. Like I was saying, I had some restrictions I put on myself for Money Plan SOS. Plus there's the branding problem. SOS, there's that negative connotation in it, which I didn't think about back when I, you know, SOS is kind of like my initials.
Yeah.
You know, or at least it was, you know, they're not actually my initials, but there's a longer story behind that.
Yeah, sure.
But a lot of people don't know that backstory. So it didn't help my brand. You know, if I want to go speak somewhere, how do they introduce me? And so many people still cannot say Money Plan SOS. They say Money SOS, SOS Money Plan, you know. So dude, it just makes sense.
I totally know. I have this show called Home Gadget Geeks, but it's on the Average Guy Network. And people are like, the average guy tech thing. I'm like, I've been doing this for 5 years. Why can't you remember Home Gadget Geeks? That's the name of the show, Home Gadget Geeks. But people get that, you know, because I have a different brand for my network as I do for the show. You'd think you cry, right? When Money Plan SOS makes sense to me, but it sounded like others struggled with it. That's one of those naming things that's hard. So what else? Keep going. Sorry, I interrupted.
No, that's again, one of the main reasons it needed to be rebranded. I saw the stats. I did something in April 2014, which really helped me grow. But then since then, it's just been pretty static.
Yeah.
Though I can tell that there are people who are done listening and then I grab new listeners. There's ways to extrapolate that from the data, but it wasn't growing the way it needed to. So that was another reasons why I said, you know, I've got the history. I've got the talent. I can relaunch brand new show, brand new, you know, format. I changed the format. It's going to launch here pretty soon. I'm hoping the network's had it for a week and I was hoping to get it out by now, but there's a process, of course, to go through. Daniel could talk more about
that's
this.
That's what slows down in a network. Now you're dealing with other people. And so, you know, it's just not you anymore. You can't just go willy-nilly. You need to adhere to some certain standards. A lot of networks want you to release on a certain day. You know, you're now in the pool with other swimmers. And so you've got to play nicely in the pool. So it's an interesting switch. I think, you know, I've been doing Home Gadget Geeks. We're on our 238th show. I'm editing that one right now.
Nice.
And I'm kind of with you. I mean, I think I'm not going to quit. I love, it's a variety show. Tech never gets old, right? It's always changing and stuff, but it is so nice. I've started a couple new shows and I'm starting a couple new ones at Gallup. As a podcaster, how nice is it to start a new show? I mean, doesn't it feel like you get that excitement again and yeah. You can do things differently because, you know, if you do too much stuff different on your current show, your listeners will let you know, like, hey, we didn't sign up for this. We signed up for, you know, for that. Did you get with Money Plan SOS, was that pretty consistent across the 200 episodes? Were you pretty consistent with it or did you kind of micro change it as you went along?
I was micro changing it. It evolved from originally the thought was I was going to do two shows solo and then have an interview show, which was going to be different than just interviewing someone.
Yeah.
That didn't work out because back then people didn't know what a podcast was. It was hard to get the other people to get on. It became easier, of course, and then people started realizing the power of podcasting. Now they were asking to be on my show. So I had to start bringing people on that I wouldn't normally bring onto my show. But they had an interesting topic. We had an interesting discussion. So it just evolved over time and it wasn't quite what I wanted it to be. Now I've got a show I want as far as the content. It's going to be easier for me to do, especially since some of the work now is going to be taken over by the network. Obviously, I don't have to worry about hosting. I don't have to worry about a whole bunch of stuff. I've got all these assets to my available to me. Yeah, so the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network is going to take care of me. And
how many shows do they have on the network?
At least 15 are active.
Oh,
most of them are fan-based shows.
Yeah.
But then they have a couple others like a local St. Louis veterinarian who's killing it. So yeah. That's very promising.
The cross-pollination that happens on a network, I think, is one of the most important things that can happen. It's hard to get right and on our network. So I have my own. I call it a network. It's just two shows. But then I'm part of the Geeks Network as well. We have 9, I think, now. And I'm surprised to watch my numbers have been creeping up of people coming over from our landing page. You know, we have thegeeksnetwork.com. And all the shows are listed there. And I'm always surprised at how many hits I get from. I was skeptical. I'm like, a network won't do that much for me. It's more about the guy who owns the network than the network, the people in the network. Totally wrong. I was very surprised. I get a healthy amount of cross, you know, that where they come from thegeeksnetwork.com. They come from there and hit my site. And I think there's some value in it. Andy asked a good question, and Steve, I'll pose this one to you. What's the best method, or what have you found to be successful when we talk about reaching out to a network to see if your show would be a good fit for it? As you've been doing this and this thought, any advice to someone, say I'm a solo podcaster and I'm thinking about joining a network, what kind of advice would you give to them?
Oh, that's a bad question for me because I wasn't looking. happen to know the guy, yeah. And I'm the organizer for the St. Louis Podcast Meetup Group. And I met Mike Wilkerson, the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network guy. I met him a few months after I launched it. And now we have the meetings there because it makes sense. He's got this place. It's all about podcasting. So I think I became more comfortable with it as I was speaking with him over what they do. But if you were to reach out, you know, I interviewed Daniel J. Lewis. He's in the chat here now. I'd love him to just jump in and talk a little bit. I interviewed him about networks a little while ago. I was thinking about doing something. I never did anything with it. And I apologize for wasting your time, Daniel, but I learned a lot. And, you know, there's a lot of really good reasons to join a podcast network. And there's a lot of reasons not to. It's up to your preference on how much control you want. How much influence do you want somebody to have over your show? You've got to be able to give up some of that control. And it's just like anything else.
Yeah. You know, you can't go and there's no one size fits all, right? You have to do the hustle. I say this a lot. You got to hustle it and you got to make sure, you know, my advice would be if you got to test the community out, listen to the podcasts that are on that community, see what they're saying. If you can survive through listening 3 times to each one of the podcasts in the network and know what's good and what's not, reach out to them. You know, this is the kind of the crazy thing. As a podcaster, when someone reaches out to me to be on my podcast, I'm always suspect. But if I reach out to them, it's okay, right? I mean, somehow there's this, like, if it's my idea, it's okay. If it's your idea, and I've had success with people reaching out to me and saying, hey, can we be on your podcast? And you got to check them out, right, before you do that. But I think the network is the same way. you got to check out the network. Get to know the network host, right? The guy who's, or the gal who's, who's going to run the thing. Live in that space for a little bit. Get known. Sometimes, float your stuff out there and see if they'll bite on it, right? You may get involved in the community and the network owner might go, hey, this is a good fit for us. We should ask this guy to be a part of what we're doing. I mean, that, to me, that's the true market success. If you can convince the network owner, you should be a part of the network without ever having to ask, it's probably a good fit from that. It's not easy and you got to be patient and it might take months. I know podcasters like things done in 2 days, but it's one of those kinds of things where you can reach out. So Daniel, Steve asked if he'd come in. So if you want to jump in real quick and talk,
he said he can't join today.
Oh. Okay.
But there was somebody who said, I wish it, maybe it was Andy because he's really in the chat room a lot, but somebody had asked a question that was really good about, you know, does your niche have to match their niche or, you know, do you have to fit the network profile, I guess, is the way they asked. I don't think that a network should only have all tech podcasts unless each one is a very specific niche. I think a network would benefit from having different types of shows or content or niches inside of their network, especially if you're going to do some cross pollination. Cause like I said, I'm doing a personal finance podcast, but the majority of the listeners on the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network, at least in my mind, and it could be varied, but there are a lot of the fan based shows, you know, the Fame Bangers and, you know, the different types of HBO shows and Lost and that type of thing. If I can get my mention in front of them for just a brief moment, they might come and seek me out a little bit and they know where to go. It's on the network.
Yeah. You know, this reminds me, I had a listener call in to Twit to This Week in Tech, which no. What's the one he does? The Leo does where people call in. Why can't I remember this? This computer guy. No, the tech guy. That's what it is. The tech guy. And so he had just come from a meetup of ours and I was super excited about stuff. And so he gets on the show and he's talking about a meetup and then he couldn't remember the name of the show and he got it wrong. And you know, you're nervous and you know, hey, you're talking. I mean, the tech guy probably gets, I think Leo gets 250,000 downloads to that podcast and a whole bunch of people live and it's radio, it's syndicated radio. So it's pretty cool. But you know, that was one of those branding moments and the network moments. You're like, oh, here's an opportunity to get it out. And it didn't happen. Somebody had jumped in. Who was it? Said, if you want to ask a Windows 10 question, that would be fine. We're on networks. Dave and I haven't really talked much about networks. So it's kind of fun to jump in and Steve with you and have this conversation. At Gallup, I am developing. So on the enterprise, you know, if we think about business podcasting, We started with one podcast just called Called to Coach, and it's around our StrengthsFinder product. We've talked about it here a lot, so I won't beat that dead horse. And then out of that birthed a 34-part around our themes, a 34-part series that we're wrapping up here. It took us 18 months to get through it, but a 34-part series in this. And so we have two, and then I'm starting two in the first quarter. I'm actually starting one right now, kind of, behind the scenes, getting some things going. We'll have two new ones coming that will add to the network. So we'll pod fade one, then we'll have three, and the other two are nothing like the first one. And so what we're hoping to do is continue to increase our audience. We're going to use Spreaker. That's our backbone for everything that we're doing. It's all hosted there. RSS feeds are going to come out of there. We're going to Spreaker's kind of up and coming, and having Rob Greenlee there is awesome. And so we're going to use the Spreaker as our media host. The other shows we may not even do blog posts for, to be honest with you. They may early on, they may just be audio as we put them out, but I'm doing it for cross-pollination from this standpoint. I want to reach, because they are all different, and I want to reach a different audience with those that I am with this. So it's kind of fun to create. I'm creating one of these at work, you know, which is even more fun to be able to do it that way. So good stuff. Okay. Let's see. Anything else, Steve, from your standpoint on networks, any other advice you'd give on what you've learned as you've done this?
Oh, I wish I could say yes, but I don't. I guess it really comes down to how much control do you want to keep? And then how much do you want to give up? And you kind of measure the pros and cons there.
Okay. Good stuff. All right. Stargate Pioneer asked this question. I'm a Windows MVP, so hopefully I can be able to answer it. It says, now with the Windows 10 Service Pack 1, that's not what they're calling it, but we'll call it that, update. It's really called Threshold 2. That's the name of the service pack that, and it's an update and not a service pack. But anyways, update last week. I know, yeah, he's saying he knows it's not called a service pack. It's called a TM1. Do you recommend trying it on the main podcasting rig? Now, this all goes back to a statement I said here on the show months ago. Do not upgrade to Windows 10 on your production box right now. With Threshold out in the service pack, I would still wait till January. That's the advice I'm giving folks right now. Get through the holidays. Don't screw with your PC. It's not a great time to make a major change. Threshold is way stabler than everything else has been, and it's, I think Windows 10 is finally ready for prime time. For most people, I run it both on my Surface Pro 3 and I run it in a VM, and I have upgraded my Surface Pro 3. In fact, the buzzer that you hear is coming off the Surface Pro 3. Why I don't have to do, why I don't have to do mix minus, because that is actually coming off the Surface and into the mixer. Of course, with Blab, you don't need mix minus, but the, my advice would be wait. Steve, have you upgraded anything to Windows 10? Or are you a full Mac guy?
I'm now a full Mac guy, so I can't speak on that. But I will say that's good advice for anything, because Macs upgraded to El Capitan just a few months ago, and when people jumped on it right away, they realized that there was a problem. I think it was with Adobe Audition. So you really need to wait. Just recently, Yoast SEO had an update. Oh my gosh, it was horrible. And there was so much complaint about it that within just a couple of hours, they ran 3.0.1 update. So they knew there was a problem they had to send out. And they're actually up to 3.03 already. It took them maybe 3 days to get that many versions out. So I think it's a good idea to just wait on some things for a little while. What are the advantages to Windows 10? I'm sorry that I don't know what they are. Why would I upgrade if I was on Windows 9 or 8 or 7?
Yeah, for 8 would be the last version. 8.1 would be the last version most people are on. A lot of folks are still on Windows 7. For my production box, I still run Windows 7. It's just, for me, it was convenient. And I wanted to have Windows Media Center on. It's the last version Media Center was supported on. So I stream my TV and I record. I do DVR type things with it. The last version of that was on 7. One is, a lot of people had trouble with Windows 8. It had a UI, it had an interface that was touch first. And now that was all fixed. By the time you get to the latest updates on Windows 8.1, it looks a lot like Windows 7. I had run Windows 8 on my production rig here for, 9 or 10 months. Runs, looks, acts just like Windows 7. So there's no difference there. With Windows 10, I don't think there's no features that you would go, I've got to have this to make my podcast better, right? So this is why I'm saying, if you now it's free right now. So from now until July 28th of 2016, Windows 10 will be a free upgrade. And I think this is the OS of the future. I think at some point, if you have a Windows PC, you want to take the free upgrade. You don't want to pay for that. So, but you don't have to do it now.
But what are the benefits? What are they added, and what have they made work better?
It's from a podcaster standpoint, there's no difference.
Okay.
Right. There's not, I can't point you to one single thing in Windows 10 that would make your podcasting experience any better from that standpoint. Now, if you bought a Windows PC that was Windows 8 and you didn't like it, that's a good reason to go to 10. The interface changes, right? There's some, and under the hood, if we're going to get really nerdy, under the hood, there's fundamental changes that come to Windows 10 that will make it easier for Microsoft to offer software to you in the future. So there's all kinds of things that, when we think about the stores that are going to be available, when we think about the integration in with the Xbox, when we think about the integration that it'll have with the phone, there'll be some interesting things that are coming. But for the average podcaster, you don't need to do it, to be honest. It's just not a, it's not, what you're running on right now is working, don't break it. So if you go to Windows 10, I'm guaranteeing you, they're going to have a few moments where you're like, oh, what's up? What? What is this? I get this complaint all the time. People beg me, when do we update to Windows 10? And I'm like, wait. And then they're like, well, I already did. And then they complain. Then they complain to me with problems. I'm like, I told you not to, from that standpoint. So it's one of those things. I think it's important. Wait at this point. If it's working, for a podcaster, Steve, and you can talk about this, workflow is so important in what you do. And I just think, you know, the difference between upgrading just willy-nilly and, you know, you now have a money-making production podcast or production process. You just can't go changing things, and you shouldn't. You should leave that. I mean, Steve, think about that. Think about the hours you've probably wasted when you've updated to these things and then they don't work, right? Have you get run into some situations in the past where you have upgraded and
now with everything. You're behind?
Yeah.
With everything. And I'm talking about plugins on WordPress too. I mean, that's always going to be the case. When you upgrade something, things change. You got to relearn the tool, find out what the new benefits are and try to use them to your advantage. So they save you time, but you spent, you know, 2 hours learning it and it saves you 30 seconds or, you know.
Yeah. So Boise Computer says Windows 8 is not good. 10 is faster and better, has a faster and better interface to your question. Gaming will have advantages over Windows 7 or Windows 8, which is true. So there's some things coming. This is the under the hood kind of stuff. The kernel in Windows 10 is a more efficient kernel than it was with Windows 8 or even Windows 7. However, the UI is still sketchy. I mean, there's still points where it's still kind of Windows 7. It's still kind of Windows. I mean, it's Windows 10, and then it pops into a interface that looks like Windows 7. It's a little jarring from that standpoint. Microsoft will fix all of that here in the next 3 to 6 months. We also have to remember Microsoft as a company goes on vacation from the middle of December to the end of December. They are out. So they put out Threshold. It's done. They're going to do a few bug fixes, and then they're all going to go on vacation, and we're not going to see anything new until the end of January. So I think what we have right now is what we have. I would not jump on it at this point. All right. So maybe that's enough with Windows 10. Steve, let me ask you this question. This comes right out of the Facebook group, the podcast community Facebook group. What is your biggest challenge when it comes to podcasting? For you personally, when you think about the single most thing that you struggle with the most, what is that?
Show notes. I want it to be a transcript, but I don't have the time and effort. So I've got to come up with a summary. And who was the famous, the pioneer of our age who said, I didn't have time to write you a short letter, so I wrote you a long one or something like that. it was the other way around. Yeah. Show notes. Just getting a good summary out there could even be difficult.
Yeah. And have you found a few tricks to make it any easier for you? Have you made it easy?
Probably the best thing to do is start with an outline. Start with bullet point list. Even if it's an interview with questions, those things right there feed into your show notes. And if it's an interview, gosh, boy, it's so much easier to do show notes when it's an interview because it's their answers. And you can just say, hey, here's what I asked him or her. Listen to the show. And, you're pointing them to hit that play button then.
Yeah. And I share my show notes with the guest and I encourage them. Put as many links as you can in for me. Everything that you put in here, I'm going to include in the show notes. And I have some success with some folks filling that out completely as the guest. They'll give me a really good summary. I work with a media guy on the Silicon Prairie News Minute, another 4-minute podcast that we do every other week, which is kind of fun. And we script it out a little bit. And I just take that script, throw it in the show notes, and that becomes the, that would work for me from that standpoint. So I found getting the guests to provide some show notes is an easy way of doing it. Steve, do you go back and listen to your whole podcast again through before you publish it? And do you check the show notes up against the post?
Through editing, yes. But yeah, if I listen to the fully published or published version before it goes out, then no. I've listened to it enough, but I'll make sure that all the transitions are there. I think I've had one episode go out with a flaw that I had to go and re-upload a new version. But I think it's a good idea to go back and listen to the show at some point.
Yeah,
just to make sure.
Double speed is helpful. Go back and listen to it at double speed. You know, if it's an hour long podcast, you're done in 30 minutes. And I actually write as I'm listening, and I figure that it kind of forces me into like getting words on a page. I don't do enough of that. I'm not a good SEO guy from that standpoint. And, but forcing as I'm listening, writing, I don't stop it. I'm just writing. I'm typing as fast as I can while I'm listening to it. Then when I'm done, clean those up, publish them. I only find a handful of people even look at the show notes anyways, which is the discouraging part of writing good show notes. Now, Google looking at it is what's most important. Because that Google SEO is going to drive traffic to your site. So you're not really doing it for people to read, which is how people started abusing it in the first place. But it is one of those things where it just, for me, I just kind of forced myself into that process. As we wrap it here, we've just got a minute or so left. Just a couple questions out there from the chat room I want to get to just before we go. Stargate Pioneer says, is there something happening in the update in January that's causing you for the Windows 10 update. So in other words, do I know something as an MVP that is right? No, I don't. There's nothing I know that is, I'm just saying, I like, one, don't screw with your computer during the holidays, right? Just go be with family, right? Do that kind of stuff. I'm more comfortable with after the holidays release at this point. By the way, I don't know of any major updates that are coming to this one. I think we're going to get them once a quarter. They're talking monthly at this point. I don't think the January is going to be very big. It'll be bug fixes for Threshold, and I think that'll be it. So no, this January seems to me after the holidays, you're kind of in that mode. We're setting new goals, right, Steve? We're setting new financial goals for the year, and it's always a good time to do it. And then Chris, last question. What do you think is the best way to share your show notes with listeners? Google Doc. I use Google Docs. Steve, have you found other ways to share them?
Show notes with the listeners?
Yeah.
It's called a blog post.
No. I mean live. When we're doing them live, you're doing a live interview kind of thing.
They usually get the questions ahead of time if there's going to be questions. So again, maybe I'm just a dinosaur and do it the old school way. I don't use Google Docs for that purpose, but I love what they offer, what you can do with it.
Okay. All right. Well, that will wrap another Ask the Podcast Coach. I'm trying to figure out how to get the music running, and I realized the channel was muted, which is always a struggle. We are out here. Steve, first of all, thanks for coming out and filling in for me, and as I fill in for Dave, thanks for coming out this morning. Great to have you on here. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it was nice to be in the co-host seat while you're in the pilot seat today.
Yeah, no, it's kind of fun. I like it. Dave, I'm sad that you didn't make it in. I was hoping that you would jump in at some point and whatever you're doing, we wish you well on moving. We know you'll be back. We are here. Dave Jackson and I are here every Saturday morning. Most Saturday mornings. 9:30 Central, 10:30 Eastern. I think that's something like 7:30 Pacific, which is super early for our wet. Just go to bed early on Friday. Do something good for your health and wake up early enough to catch us. We're at askthepodcastcoach.com/live. It's easier to say than it is to type, but type that in. And Dave embeds these blabs out there if you want to join us. For the 87 folks and the 32 are currently live, we want to say thanks for coming out and joining us on a Saturday morning. We hope you found value in this. Steve and I will stay around for a post show, which we'll record as well, because that goes into the Patreon feed at askthepodcastcoach.com/awesome, which is I love that link, /awesome for you awesome supporters. And all that goes to keep Dave's operations running. So if you want to become a patron, I think there's a $1 option, a $5 option, and a $10 option. Head out to the askthepodcastcoach.com/awesome and sign up as a patron. Patron? I guess that's the way we say it today. Steve, thanks again. We're back next Saturday. Dave will be in the seat. And with that, we'll close Ask the Podcast Coach. Stay around for the post show, and we'll see you here on the other side.